Hey everyone, you know what's wild? We spend so much time building and using the web, but rarely stop to think about how dramatically it might change. Well, today we're diving into exactly that. I'm really excited to chat with Rachel Lee Neighbors, who's been shaping how we build for the web from React to W3C, and is now working on something that might change how we all use the internet. So maybe grab yourself some nice hot beverage and listen in while we talk about this. Hi, Rachel. How's it going? Rachel Lee.
Yeah, it's the Southern style. If you've ever been to the Southern United States, people often use their middle names and their first names together, like Mary Beth or Billy Bob. In my case, I got Rachel Lee.
So you're spending a good amount of time recently with like AI and web development. And I mean, AI is right now everywhere. It's like the next hot big thing. And it seems to stick more than Web3 did. So how do you look at the probability of AI being an integral part of our A, developer experience, but also B, at the end, the user experience?
I am so happy we're talking. So for me, after I had fun on the React team, that was my pandemic project, was to work with the React team to build ReactNative.dev and React.dev and explain to the world how to think in React. Yeah. And then I was very, very tired of the front end space. I don't know how to describe it. I was sort of like, yes, I've seen how this works under the hood. I'm done. I went to a CSS conf after moving on from big tech and coming back to London. And I was there in Amsterdam, and I'm watching as all these APIs and these specs that we dreamed about 10 years ago are out, they're fully baked. And then I went to config, and I also saw like, oh, people don't need to know how to design anymore to build websites. Look at all these product designers, and they don't really know CSS. And look at all these engineers, and they don't know CSS either. They're just, we're exporting to CSS, and it's good enough. And I was like, oh, front-end development is just boring now. It's done. It's baked. It's a product that's been finished. Anyone can build websites now, which was the original goal many years ago. And I was like, well, what else can we do? What else is interesting? And I started getting into different ways of working with the web. So like, what's the next step? Well, I've worked on browsers. I've worked on Microsoft Edge. I've partnered with Mozilla on Firefox's animation tools. I've been at GDE in the web field. It's a program that Google does with Chrome. So I have a long history with browsers. I have opinions about browsers. I'm always surprised at how browsers could do so much more, but they don't. And I use Arc Browser because of all the browsers on the web doing things right now, I feel like they're doing some of the more interesting things. It's kind of slowed down the interesting things coming out of Arc Browser, but I still prefer to use it. I still think it's one of the more interesting, lovable browsers out there. And I started reading up on, okay, you ready? I've always been reading about AI. This is the little deep learning book that I love. It has you build your own perceptron and very shallow neural network. And after you've done this and you've seen the magic, you can't unsee it. You're just like, it's just math. GPT's just math. It's just math. You can see the math and you're like, this is not God. This is not intelligence. It's math. And I've spent quite a bit of my time wandering in the desert, coming to Europe, just studying AI and ML. And I ended up collaborating with this team in Palo Alto, building something called AgentQL, which uses Playwright and LLMs to allow AI agents to interact with web pages. You can check it out at agentql.com. It's pretty darn cool, if I do say so myself. I mean, so cool, I spent 9 months working with them on it. And anyway, after I started working on it, I noticed other things coming out like retriever.ai. There's Strawberry Browser, which is being worked on by the people who I think they worked on Dendrite, which is similar to AgentQL. There are a lot of little things, little libraries, little utilities that allow computers to interact with the web. But we're also seeing, like, look at the Google results that are out there. You know, what happens when we're not even looking at websites anymore? We're looking at rehashes brought to us by LLMs. And that's where I've been thinking these days. I've been I'm turning into a bit of a futurist, but I've been watching what's happening. And from what I know of how browsers have evolved, how technology has evolved and adoption and production trends, I have some theories about what's next for the web. And they're not exactly hopeful theories. They're just what I call realistic theories.
Okay, you cannot just like teaser it like that and then leave it at this cliffhanger. So you need to like tell me, like what are you envisioning or what are you seeing?
Well, for the past 10 plus years, more even, we have been dutifully tagging and optimizing our content for search engines, or we have been collectively piling it into platforms like YouTube or Facebook. And these platforms have enjoyed our network effects. We share on Facebook because that's where our families are. They've got our families hostage over there, so we have to keep using them. This is a process called enshittification, which Cory Doctorow, by the way, coined. I think we have to talk. We cannot talk about the future of the web without talking about the enshittification of platforms, because we used to have blogs, we used to use IRC. Everything used to be very peer-to-peer. What happened? Well, it started that people were incentivized to come join their friends on a platform, you know, like everybody come share it with your friends and your family, and then the platform owners, they took the profits and they used it to bring over people creating the things that you would like, you know, like Amazon started incentivizing people to list on their site. They had a whole Kindle creators program. Netflix did its, you know, star searches, etc. YouTube has grants that it gives out, bring over the people who create the product. And then once you've got the audience, you know, the consumer and the producer in one place, you just eat their margins. You are able to squeeze them for as much as you want, and you send those profits, you redirect them to your shareholders. And that's what enshittification is. It's why Hinge became less useful as soon as it got purchased, because, you know, they've got the customer and they've got the supply in one place, so profits go away. You're not profiting from this experience anymore. This happens everywhere. It will happen to AI as well, or any AI-based product you are purchasing. But at the start of the web wasn't a product. The browser was a thing you used to access it. And for the past 10 or 20 years, we've been neatly tagging all of our content with meta descriptions, etc., so it'll be properly indexed by search engines. And it's been known for some time that the biggest challenge with information on the web is that there's so much of it. Providers are competing on attention, an attention economy. You're trying to get your thing front and center in front of people who probably don't want to see your thing. You hope they do, but they probably are more interested in their friends or cat video or the product that's actually superior. So you end up in this friction zone where people are trying to get this content and suppliers and platforms are actively trying to make them do a little dance to get at it. And here's where AI comes in. Having worked, like the interesting thing about AgentQL was it required a lot of interaction with the scraper community. And I know we don't talk about scrapers on the internet because that's bad. But honestly, having looked at scrapers, I've really started to see the scraper community. I've started to feel like platforms are, you know, the idea is, ooh, Snidely Whiplash, he wants to get your data from Facebook or LinkedIn. But when you look at it, like Facebook, LinkedIn, etc., they take your data, you as a user have created, your content, your posts, etc., and then they make people who want to access it pay them for it. The information's not free. You created it, but it doesn't belong to you. So scrapers with AI are now better equipped than ever to just crack open those doors and get inside. There's all kinds of proxy rotation, etc. It's always been a cat and mouse game, but now that we're able to analyze entire pages with an LLM to identify where forms are, what's being said, the data that's on that page, obfuscation isn't really an option, and authentication is getting harder and harder for platforms to make sure that it's not a bot, it's a person. And it brings the question of, if I have given an agent my permission to act on my behalf, exactly, you know, eventually the platforms are going to have to allow for people to allow their agents inside. So this gets into some really interesting territory around who owns the data and who's allowed to do what with it. But the idea that you could have a personal agent going out and accessing your social accounts and bringing back the feeds to you to consume in a way that you prefer without being intervened by any algorithm or having to force people to join a particular social network or use a particular app, being able to aggregate your own interactions, your own news from your own sources, like RSS feeds on steroids, that's actually possible today. And people are starting to build apps around this. There are a bunch of social apps out now that use a little bit of AI and AT Proto, which is what Blue Sky runs on, these decentralized, the decentralized web that Web3 kept talking about. Well, it turns out it's possible without blockchain. And those standards are starting to percolate, and they work really well with personal agents. So we are on the cusp of a deplatformed web. And what does that mean for people who build sites for a living, for companies that base their advertising models on gating information that's just about to be freely available everywhere? We're in for a lot of change.
Okay, I have to think about this a lot because there was so much in there right now.
I know. And a lot of it's crazy talk. You're welcome to ignore me.
Well, so I like the metaphor or metaphor that you used of like RSS feeds on steroids, where it's like, okay, it basically gives me the information that I want at the right time and just the information. Is that something that you have already seen in a prototype, or is that just something that you can think of might happen sooner than later?
People are already prototyping these examples. I mean, some of it is very network locked. For instance, there are, AT Proto basically is your social. The way to think about the AT protocol is imagine if your social life was as grab and go as your email address. So, you can use a different email client, but your address is yours. Wherever you take it with you just need a copy of all the emails that you were using in the previous client and you're good to go. That's how you can think about it. So now you can choose where you use it. You can use it with multiple clients. There's an Instagram clone that uses AT Proto that's out there. I think it's called Flashes. There's like a YouTube clone, etc. But the question is, what happens? Like, it's still everyone has to go use that new protocol. You know the old story of like, you know what we need? Oh, to unify all these standards, another standard. You know what we need to unify all these social identifiers, another social identifier. But here's where it gets fun. Because you could, using AI, create feeds from the unfeedable. You could go in and create your own personal agent that logs into your X account, gets all of the recent posts from your followers, and then pumps them into an aggregate feed post for you to see. And if I can build that for me, which I have, then it's only a matter of time before someone builds it for everyone and charges a fee for it or makes it an open source piece of software that you can use. Yeah, it gets into all kinds of weird T's and C's with the platforms, but that's like I think that that's actually it's going to come to a head soon. Platforms are going to have to offer a blessed way for your personal agent to access the content because otherwise they're going to have to deal with break-ins and nobody likes a break-in. Nobody likes to feel like you can't trust a platform because they keep getting infested by bots. It's much better to just allow the bots in a specific authenticated way and ask them to leave nicely. You want to feed the birds at the bird feeder. You don't want them attacking your head. But that is my theory. So we've already seen a couple of these things in process. We've seen what I call Borg browsers, by the way. Like retriever.ai, you spell it like retriever, but without any of the vowels. .ai, it's an automation extension for Chrome that like will populate spreadsheets for you based on information that you give it. It basically makes data entry a breeze. And of course, you've got other things like Strawberry Browser, where you can pass it information and say like, go order me a pizza, and it'll do it in the browser. That's great. I love it. But that's only a halfway step. The full step is you never open a browser. You just talk to your Tasker app and say, order me a pizza. And this is the same app you use to message your friends, and it goes to Domino's uses their MCP or is really smart and it uses an API outright, but it'll probably use MCP, which is just an API with some instructions for the agent to use it. And it'll like do that, and we'll have access to your credit card. And back in the old days, we used to fear giving our credit card to forms online. Eventually, we're going to be okay with giving our forms to an app that's under the hood using an agent. It's not going to be AI or an agent. It's just going to be an app that you use.
That very much describes like the way it's going to have, or the impact that AI is going to have on our daily life, us as consumers at the end of the day. How do you think the professional industry will shift? Of like, okay, I imagine now, I went through like general software development like through the steps like a little bit more than 10 years ago, but if I would start now, I would be like, super demotivated to be like, okay, why should I even get into software development right now? Or be extremely hyped because I could utilize all those. I don't think like it's this average of like, well, it's kind of like a stable career, right? Like that's a,
Who
that,
has
those are
stable
the,
careers now?
well, but that's what I was thinking like 10 years ago, where I was like, okay, like there's high demand. It seems fairly stable. Well, stable in the sense of like there's going to be demand in 10 years or plus. So, how do you look at that for like people that start the career now?
So actually, I still think that if you are passionate about programming, you should study computer science. I think if you are passionate about something and it is tangentially related to profit, you should probably study it professionally. How we price that is another question. For me, I've learned computer science by buying the textbooks that they teach in college and watching YouTube videos. I will go look up, hang on, I'm just gonna put this in the center. When there's a footnote here that's like so and so's lecture at Stanford, I go watch it on YouTube. It's like, we are, it's perfectly fine for you to learn everything about something you love using the resources that are
Yes.
available. You do not have to go through traditional expensive modes unless you really want to or you got a lot of money laying around. I think that people are really afraid if they're specialists, and this is something that's as old as time. Like back in the olden days, graphic designers used paste and cellophane. And when everything started moving to programs like Adobe Photoshop, the old timers were like, well, it will never be as good as what I can do with a pasted mockup. And 10 years later, it was as good. But the point is, there are a lot more people able to design now than there ever were before. I do think that these tools lower the barrier to entry. In the same way that like FrontPage got me into building websites back in the day, I feel like things like Cursor are going to allow teenagers to build their own programs in the same way. It also allows people who might feel like they're outdated to come back. I remember talking to parents being like, I
Oh,
don't
yeah.
know if I can come back because I've been out for 2 years. Let me tell you can use Cursor. You can use Cursor right now and get up to date on pretty much any code base. And as long as you remember the fundamentals and how to have a discussion about the decisions you're making, you're gonna be able to contribute meaningfully again. So I feel like this is less, oh, it's gonna take our jobs, and a little bit more, this is empowering you to not have to be the person who stays up late and reads every blog post by Dan Abramov to be a meaningful contributor on your team. It's going to be easier than ever to get in there and do the work that you need to do. If you're thinking about getting into programming because you think it's cool and you want to build cool stuff, you don't need permission to do that. Come in and do the work. If you're thinking about it because you want a long and stable career, there are probably, I don't know, like maybe a role, like you should be a plumber because that's going to be the last thing that's going to get like revolutionized. So go be a plumber or a carpenter. Those are good, stable careers. You should do that. I highly recommend those. But everything else is, like it might change.
The thing that I like about this is that the barrier to entry gets so much lower. I think I would be surprised if it doesn't have an impact on the overall distribution of the wage. Because if I look at some salaries in Silicon Valley, it's just bonkers for me. So I would not be surprised if that levels out a little bit, just because the career gets more accessible.
And that is something that I think we all need to take note of. And I already know, like, I saw this in CSS when people are like, nobody values CSS anymore. It's all JavaScript. Well, it's because a lot of CSS got automated. It got good enough, you know? You can export Tailwind classes from Figma now. Like, come on. You know, you don't need to be an expert at this anymore to do your job. And so it's not a must-have on the list of things that people will pay a lot of money for anymore. And the things that people will pay a lot of money for are going to change. And front-end development is going to be one of the first things that people aren't going to pay as much for. Full stack is coming right behind it. When it comes to like building complicated data systems, those are still going to get paid a lot. You know, if you want to get paid a lot, get into databases. That stuff's still really hard for machines to talk to humans about. That'll last another 5 years.
I like that the time horizon we're talking about is like 5 years. From that aspect, so we talked. I would still like to talk about more of like the user experience aspect of things, because we now talked about like social, like daily personal life. We talked about career, but do you think the way websites are going to be structured is going to change to accommodate more of that agentic approach?
Already changing a bit. Over here in the developer world, we have something called LLMs.txt,
That's true.
which is a way to, it's kind of like sitemap.xml, but it's a markdown file instead of XML. This tells you, this t like, there's a generational gap because back in the day it was all XML this and now it's markdown that. Anyway, so we've got, I know, right? And I'm like, do we need to put this in a meta tag? It's like, maybe we don't. So LLMs.txt, it's like a markdown file that you can just pass to LLMs that kind of gives them the rundown of where everything on the site is, how it works, what its dealio is, so that folks can just consume it into an LLM. And people are likely going to have their own on-device LLMs in the future. Not today, but tomorrow. It's going to happen. Everyone's going to have their own personal LLM that summarizes stuff for them. And this way, it can just go over to a website and be like, it's like having its own internal crawl. You add it to its context so it can retrieve information as it needs to talk with you. Oh man, I feel like we're already adjusting. So, in addition to LLMs text, there's also, oh my gosh. Like people, when they saw Cursor, were like, what if Cursor only ever writes React code? Well, no, because Cursor has a way of going out. It uses in this file you can submit your own documentation to. It crawls it, it updates itself in a way, creating great documentation for LLMs is an important thing. It turns out because LLMs are so dang human, writing great docs is the best way to get an LLM to understand your tech product. It's another story entirely. But this is one way that we're changing things. And MCP, I actually think, is going to be the next SEO. And hold up. If you're probably thinking, that's crazy. How is that going to be SEO?
I don't. Keep talking. I don't, but keep
I'm
talking.
monologuing. But have you ever done any SEO work?
Yes, unfortunately.
We all do it, and we all feel kind of gross doing it, don't we?
It's kind of
It's like,
icky.
because you feel like you're kind of tricking people, right?
Yeah, in a way, but it's also like playing the game, right? Like your content is just as valuable as many people see it at the end of the day.
We want to believe it's a meritocracy and that good stuff will naturally surface to the top. The idea that we might have to tag things and tell the beast that we want to be number one for this thing makes us feel a little disingenuous. So, MCP is just an API endpoint with some instructions for how an agent should use it. Another way to think of it is instead of having one of these Borg browsers that goes to Domino's.com and fills out a form and selects pizza, etc., Domino's could just publish an MCP that says, yeah, these are your topping selections. You can pick two, and just publish it, just like they would publish an API endpoint. And it would have everything, including, like, a payments page. Maybe it does take people to a payments page where they review their order and they say, yes, that's what I meant, and put in their information. But everything up to that person could send a prompt, and the agent would completely interact with that MCP endpoint to send the appropriate information to Domino's and really tighten that loop up. No UI required. That is something that I imagine sites that do transactions that want to take money would love to surface to any agents that might like to give them the money.
So,
Rabbit, did you see the little rabbit device?
yes.
Yeah, that couldn't work in today's world. It was not possible because it was having to do weird LLM based interacting with forms that are changing all the
Yes.
time. That's the halfway point is we still interact with forms, but we do it smarter, like with Agent QL. But the whole leap is to just do it straight up with MCP. Rabbit would then interact with Uber's MCP to connect to your account and call you a car. And it could do that. Anything could do that. You could build a device, any kind of device that could interact with MCP and a person's persona and do that. No browser, no iPhone, no Siri. You can do that. And as
No.
soon as businesses figure that out and someone creates a popular device that can do that, we are off to the races. It will be the next SEO. And I say that as in, if you're thinking, man, I need to make an agency, what's going to be the next hot thing? This is the next hot thing. Nobody wanted to do this with APIs because the only way to interact with an API is to have someone on the other end who's an engineer who knows how to interact with an API. MCP doesn't need an engineer on the other end interacting with the API. It just needs an agent. And soon we will all be able to have our own agents.
I would like to loop back to one thing that you said. So do you think, I think I read like an article like probably like a couple months ago right now that more traditionally established programming languages are going to rather survive. You mentioned, or you brought up the case with React will just, Cursor will just write React code. But do you think that the quality of output in Java, or like the output quality of a Java question prompt, generate me some Java code, would be better than maybe if I would ask, hey, can you generate me some Rust code? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, we ha it's not like programming languages pop up left and right on a daily basis these days, but it's still a thing that's getting explored. So I'm wondering, just based on the amount of data that has been there, if those more emerging languages are just going to fade. Because the quality that the LLM puts out is not up to expectation.
I think so. When we use the term LLM when it comes to code, we could also swap in Stack Overflow or Discord, any place that people go to get answers.
Yes.
And this is just magnifying the feedback loop. These things were trained on those. So we've got a snapshot and shot in time. The real question we might want to ask ourselves is, are people going to abandon LLMs if they can't stay up to date as these, as React and Next evolve? The people building the code generators know this. And so they'll want to keep up to date with the latest versions, etc. Otherwise, we're all going to be working in PHP 3 until we die. And to be honest, in some ways, that does happen. That is a very natural thing to happen. And we have been looking, even without LLMs, in the front-end development community at stagnation, where it's all just React. People are just hiring for React. It's just React out there. Once again, is this a bad thing? I mean, it depends. If you don't code React, it's probably a bad thing. But if you do, I mean, you might say, is this the right format for all projects? Maybe not. But, it's another question of, we can still use PHP and we can still use CSS and WordPress. Like, some things are just, they're done and they're fine. The real question, I think, is once people have a good idea, like, say someone comes up with, aha, the thing that's going to replace React, and how is it going to get big enough to do that when, everyone's using LLMs instead of going to Stack Overflow?
Yes.
Well, there are a couple of ways that this could happen. And I'm not trying to be optimistic here. I'm just thinking, like, well, if I were a person who had this great idea and I was like, now I need to teach my favorite editor to help me code, I would probably be building it alongside the editor. I would think that there would be like an incubation path where you plus the smart editor and your team start working on a project together. You have an idea and you start push-pulling. And that there would be a way to feed that out to the greater system. And it might actually create even better programming languages, frameworks, etc., because you're working with an editor that has been trained on everything that came before, all of the ways that it's failed, etc. So rather than fighting the system, maybe the answer is a full embracing of the system.
How would that look like? Are we talking about
Dude,
like
I don't know. I don't build HIDs. Maybe, well, let's spitball here. What could it look like? Well, maybe something like I'm going to pretend I'm Cursor, and I want to help the open source community continue to build great stuff that keeps people coding so that they'll keep using Cursor. So I create maybe a feature called Ponds. And everyone can build their own little pond. And if your pond gets popular enough, it gets merged into the core data set that Cursor trains from. But it also has like access to all of the coding, all the weights and biases, etc., that Cursor's using, so that you can start building things that riff off of what exists. And this way, they would be like a special outgrowth of the systems that we're using for coding. Yeah, one of the things I think about is like how DeepSeek was trained on ChatGPT. Like we can build derivative things that are better and lighter. If we can do it for GPTs, we can do it for like programming languages and frameworks and code bases.
True.
But, you know, we're going to have to build that in as a part of our process.
Do you think, as part of that I would not be surprised if like the focus for open source programs therefore shifts from quality docs and maybe like sample applications and those kind of things towards like, okay, here's an LLM that we trained.
I think it will be both, because the only way you can train an LLM is with great examples and
True.
docs. And that means that projects like React, which bet big on examples and docs, will come out on top. So it won't be just, I made this cool thing and I threw it up on Gist, I hope you like it. It's going to be, I and my community all work together to really think this through. We've provided this great source base. We're adding it to this trusted LLM network to train. We're going to be in the next training session, and we really want to see what everyone is building. And please contribute and answer these questions in a publicly accessible place so that we can get it to be one of the recommended ways to get started building an app.
That's super interesting. I haven't even thought about that. But
This is
yeah,
what
that
I
totally
mean
makes sense.
by. This is going to be the new SEO. Like the process of interacting with big LLMs and code bases is going to be more important than just tagging your GitHub's project page.
A couple of weeks ago, I saw a proposal for Node modules to ship their compiled docs as markdown files for LLMs. Is what do you think about that?
So, node modules, all of them, to do that?
Pretty much, yeah.
I think that's smart. I think they should do
Yeah.
it. Like, why would you try to hide your information when it could help people? This is a new way for people to consume information. What do you think about it? It sounds like you have some hesitation.
No, I don't have some hesitation. I think there are some, I mean, there's a little bit of the technical challenge because usually the goal was always to like, okay, take TypeScript comments or whatever and generate a website. And now it would be like an additional step because you still want the website, right? You still want to incorporate people to look at docs if they want to. But I mean,
Yeah.
technical challenges are just technical challenges. That's nothing that couldn't be overcome fairly easily. A lot of docs even like already incorporate for like static content to be marked down. So it's like, okay, just make sure it's like in a structured way accessible. No, I don't see an issue. And in general, I'm always a big fan of having a structured approach for certain things. And this is one, the same way you mentioned LLM or slash LLM text or markdown or something for websites. I think this would be a great way for Node modules to be more accessible.
Agreed. I think we'll also like I mentioned feeds. RSS got completely trounced back in the day. RSS was kind of end of life by Google feed or feed reader, etc. Around the time Facebook went. But I feel like AT Proto brings back RSS on steroids, and we will see more like it starts with the engineers creating LLMs.txt, which is, let's be honest, just RSS, but for your documentation. Let's be honest, that's what it is. There was already a spec, man. Whatever. We'll reinvent this wheel over and over again until we get it right. But we're probably going to be moving towards feeds. Feeds as a way to broadcast data. MCP as a way to interact with providers. And so these are the two things to really focus on when you're building now is how are you going to feed data out? What's the standard you're going to use? You're going to use RSS? You're going to use AT Proto? You're just going to dump things into an LLM? LLMs.txt. Really think about which ones you're going to use. It's going to be a little faffy for a couple of years while people are figuring it out, and we figure out the use cases in the wild like we do. And I'm so excited. Like, I personally feel like it's the Wild West, and there's always an opportunity to build something better. I feel like I sound super hyped whenever people
Yes.
talk to me about this. I'm just like, But part of that is because I've seen all this technology come before. I watched it not quite be there, and I watched it become platformized. I watched it all get into late stage capitalization, the enshittification. Like basically, everyone uses a browser run by an advertising company to browse the sum total of human knowledge. Like, how messed up is that? And there's no alternative, really. There's always a data plan. Even like you look at Firefox, it's just not the same. I'm excited because it's the Wild West right now, and there's an opportunity for us to do a lot of things differently, maybe better.
Hopefully.
We'll probably do a lot of things wrong again, and badly. But at the same time, we learned a lot over the past 3 decades, and I have hope that we're going to build something truly amazing.
I love that. Okay, I already like shared my opinion through like a snarky comment before, but do you think that AI could go take a leap kind of like Web3 did? Where like a lot of people, it was like, I think, well, I don't want to take my perspective into play here, so do you think AI is a little bit of a hype train right now, where it might just fail again?
Absolutely. It
Okay.
totally is.
Okay.
I'm not an official advocate. Pardon me. I'm not an advocate for anything.
Yeah.
But when I'm in Silicon Valley and doing business there, a lot of the people are selling AI services they're looking for buyers. And there are a lot of companies that have given their employees mandate to like, shoo, go do something with AI. And they are. They're going and seeing if they can make things cheaper, faster, better. And I hear some stories where it's like, yeah, AI really, helped our bottom line. But a lot of the times, these are experiments and they don't go great, or they're really expensive, actually, when we look at the actual cost out of the side of the prototype. We will literally send this job back to an offshore mechanical Turk farm because it's actually still too expensive to do it with AI. Humans are cheaper. That happens. I think that there's going to be an AI sobering when people, in a couple of years, they come around and they're going to be like, well, it did a lot of things, but it didn't do all the things. The world will be different then. Like, learning to code is going to be different. Coding day to day is going to be different. Juniors are going to be able to do a lot more to get started. And seniors are going to, probably find that the expertise that they really valued and was really valued in them is not quite so valuable anymore. There'll be a kind of a flattening in the software engineering world because of the advancements made. But there's also, I think that there is a hype train here. I think there is definitely a lot of hype around the data services, that once we look at the true costs, we're probably going to be like, ugh, I don't know. Is it worth it? That's
No.
my vibe, just from going to these conferences, talking with the companies, etc.
That's interesting. So I think, I mean, there are still Web3 businesses out there, so it's not like it completely faded. So that was a little bit black and
Oh,
white. There are
there will
still
be good use
viable business.
cases.
There are valid use cases, and I personally think AI is going to stick more than Web3 did.
Agreed.
But I also think it's kind of like the gold rush, where it's like if you're doing a startup right now, it has to have AI. Like the way it 10 years had to disrupt the world, now it has to be AI.
And I think in a couple of years, we're going to see AI disappear. There are a lot of startups right now that are just like AI as a, like it's a therapist in your pocket. It's just a robot. People will be able to use their own LLM for that. And that will happen. The commodification of personal LLMs slash GPTs. But it's a nice hype train to ride right now. And I always advise that you want to be a part of the wave. You want to be like riding the wave rather than having the wave crash into you.
You need to dodge at the right time.
Or you need to be like, you know what? I'm going to try Cursor and Windsurf and see which one's right for me. They are not like GitHub Copilot. You really got to try them. I don't have to do all of the menial work that I used to, like adding target underscore blank to external links in Markdown. I don't have to do that. I can just be like, yo, LLM, go do. And it does. And it uplevels the quality for me, makes it easier, more fun.
That's the thing that I like about it. Like it takes away like the tedious parts that I don't want to deal with, and I can actually focus on like the more exciting engineering problems.
And it's a great rubber duck debugger. Like, I can talk it through and be like, well, I was thinking we were going to use dynamic content for this, but I think it's all hard-coded here. What if we set up an API endpoint and then we would fetch it from there? And it's always like, that's a great idea. I can't wait for negative mode to be introduced where the thing argues with me like a German engineer would. I want it to argue with me. It's like, stop telling me I have great ideas. Tell me it's a stupid idea and you have a better one. That's something we get from humans that we do not get from these systems that is irreplaceable, in my opinion. The arguments.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well I would deal with that. I get very particular about my opinions.
This is actually something that is becoming an area of concern for people who form relationships, like parasocial relationships with LLMs, is that dealing with an LLM, like a person, is very different from dealing with a real person because the LLM has no opinions, no agenda. It's just there to please you and make you think it's real thanks to the Turing test. So when people who have been heavily interacting with GPTs, adults and children, what's it like when they suddenly have to deal with a real person who argues with them? People don't like it when I argue with them. What are they going to think when they've been raised on an avatar of their parent reading them bedtime stories instead of a real person?
Yeah, that's very dystopian
That is a reality that actually can happen with the state of the art now, and I'm guaranteeing you it will happen. And that's, I think, one of the more challenging parts of the future we have to look to.
me. Yeah, to some extent I look at it as like the same way parents just put kids in front of a TV for 10 hours a day, and that just being like the next a couple evolution steps from there.
And when I was a kid, I always thought it was just, I was raised poor. And I always thought, that was just sort of like only something that we lower classes did, parking the kids in front of the electronic babysitter. But when I go to well-to-do areas, like in the fancy Marylebone district in London or in Palo Alto, I very often see parents just handing their fancy peripherals to their kids and being like, watch Peppa Pig on the iPad. I need to do things. What happens when it's talk to your fake dad on the iPad?
For all parents, Peppa Pig is evil. Don't let your kids watch Peppa Pig. There are much better stuff out there.
I mean, we still have to deal with that challenge,
Yes.
even when people are like, what cartoons do you let your kid watch? Is it going to be like, what tuned LLM do you let your kid
Yeah.
interact with?
Yes. Miss Rachel is pretty good, though. No, I agree. I think there's a balance for that kind of stuff. And I'm curious to see how that plays out.
So I want to bring the talk full circle. I've given you some glimpses into like how technologies of old are becoming new again. Oh my God, local first. Oh my God, MCP, it's just APIs. And like all of these things can be used by your own personal LLM. You don't need a platform to tell you what to watch next. You just need your own dang algorithm on your machine sucking down a bunch of feeds off the internet. So the thing to keep in mind here is the internet itself is not going to disappear, but it might start to feel a little bit more like an old mall, as especially when these different interfaces for dealing with the information on the internet become more popular. They'll probably become more popular with young people first. Probably someone's going to vibe code something at college and it's going to go viral with their friends groups like WhatsApp did and Instagram did back in the day and Facebook. I would look towards the colleges and somebody's going to start, I don't want to interact with the web to see my friends. I just want to use this app. And it's going to feel a little weirder walking around a web that doesn't have children in it anymore. Let's put it that way. The web will still exist. It is the pipes of which on which data flows. Even your apps use the web. But it might not be necessary anymore to build a website to participate or to join a platform to participate. It may be as simple as just setting up your profile, similar to like on Blue Sky, and sharing a QR code with a friend for them to subscribe to your feed in whatever it is they're using to consume content from the web. And that's kind of going back to the roots that the web was built on.
That's true. Well, that was a perfect full circle.
But it's not going to be like that overnight. We're still going to have the web, the same way we still used IRC for a long time after forums and message boards were invented. And some people still use IRC. But let's be honest, when you use IRC, it definitely feels like you're in an old banged-up mall compared to all the other messengers that are available.
On the same note, like on the day I launched this newsletter as part of this, someone was asking me, "Do you have an RSS feed?" And I was like, "I didn't even thought about that. Give me a couple of minutes. Sure, I'm happy to do that, but I didn't even thought about that."
You gotta create a feed. Don't let it die. It's hot again.
Yeah, I did. It took me a couple of
Good.
minutes.
Oh, speaking of feeds and stuff, I'm gonna start a newsletter of my own call at agenticweb.substack.com. I'll find a nicer URL for it. But in the meantime, I figured it would be nice to like regularly share these ideas. Just because I think it's fun to broadcast and we are a feed-based community right now. Yeah, so go check it out.
I'll put the link in the description. Thanks for
Oh,
sharing
thank
that.
you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hopefully it'll be useful and we'll see if any of my bets come to fruition over the next couple of years.
So that has nothing to do with the fact that I run a newsletter myself, but I think newsletters are very underutilized. There's a lot of noise out there.
They're
There are a
curated
lot of, yes.
with human
So
discernment.
that is a fancy word. That is way above my level of eloquency. So I think we can come to an end here. This was great. I really appreciate you joining me for this and giving your perspective on things. I hope some of the things you said come true. I hope some of them don't come true. But I guess we see about
It would probably be 50-50, like
Yeah.
everything in life. Some will, some won't. Hopefully, well, you'll get the good with the bad. But yeah, Nicholas, thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome to be here, and I really had a great time chatting with you. I'm looking forward to seeing you out there in the cyberpunk future where we don't have websites, we just have feeds.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Bye.